Welcome to Inside Personal Growth Podcast. Deep dive with us as we unlock the secrets to personal development, empowering you to thrive. Here, growth isn't just a goal, it's a journey. Tune in, transform, and take your life to the next level by listening to just one of our podcasts. Welcome back to Inside Personal Growth. This is Greg Voisin, the host of Inside Personal Growth. And for all of you out there, I'm sure you recognize the guy on the other side of the screen. It's Guy Kawasaki. Guy has been on this planet as long as me. We're both 69 years old. I want to acknowledge him for that.
We're like two old cockroaches.
Yeah, two old cockroaches, but we're really not old. We're young at heart. So we're still doing this. We're out here doing it. And he has a new book out, and it's called Think Remarkable. And it's forward by Jane Goodall. I want to know how you got Jane Goodall to look in your hair for your podcast show, because she's on everyone. She's like, she was looking in the gorilla. It was really good.
She wasn't looking in my hair. She was looking for lice, actually.
Oh, for lice.
That's what chimpanzees do for each other.
I know. And I want to give a shout out to Madison Neusmer. I pronounce it right or no? Did I screw it
Neusmer.
Up?
Neusmer.
She's the co-author with Guy on the book as well. And for all of you, please go out. We'll put a link to Amazon. We'll put a link to Guy Kawasaki. That's KAWASAKI.com. There you can learn more about his podcasts, his books, his speeches, his classes, his resources, everything. Well, you know, Guy,
It's a good day when I can be on your podcast.
Well, it's a good day that you came on the podcast, because this is going to be a rock and roll podcast. I already feel it. So I reflect back. I just mentioned to you a few seconds ago before we started recording that we did a podcast back in September 2011 for your book, Enchantment, The Art of Changing Hearts, Minds, and Actions. And here's what I realized as I was reflecting, getting ready to do this podcast, that you've been on quite a journey. I mean, when I look at Canva, Apple, and I look at all these places that you've been, but your personal purpose has always been steadfast. I remember watching you speak at events, and I met you first, and I can't even remember where the event was. It might have been the CES show or something like that, wherever you spoke. I think when I met you first, it was actually Bill Gates was speaking as well. What is your personal purpose, and what do you hope that the readers are going to take away from your new book that will inspire them? And here's the important point: to live their lives on purpose and make a difference in the world.
So I have this podcast called Remarkable People, and it's now 5 years old. So it's much younger than yours. And I now have about 250 episodes, and that's 250 hours plus 5,000 pages of transcripts. And it's with people like Jane Goodall and Margaret Atwood, Stacey Abrams, Carol Dweck, Angela Duckworth, Stephen Wolfram, Stephen Wozniak. And so I figured out there's a ton of inspiration and information in those transcripts and hours of episodes, but it's asking too much for people to read that much or listen to that much. So Madison and I, we took 5,000 pages down to 170, and it's heavily filtered and influenced by my hand-to-hand combat on the front lines of technology in Silicon Valley. And so this is a book. It's not, you know, it's not Guy's story per se. I'm the editor. I'm the, you know, I'm the person who's like making it all work, as opposed to the actual content provider. And so I'm trying to capture the information and inspiration of these 250 people or so that you can profit from the lessons of a Jane Goodall or a Neil deGrasse Tyson that, you know, you may not be able to get to know personally.
Well, you did a wonderful job of it. And I love the pictures in the book, and I love the stories, because the stories really tell it all. The stories of all these people's names, who many of our listeners aren't going to know because they're just not. But same thing with your podcast. You do the same thing. You have people who maybe aren't recognizable names every day out there, but who have made a huge difference in the world. And one of the things I want to let the listeners know, and they may or may not know this about you, is that besides this journey with Apple, you're still the chief evangelist officer for Canva, the creator of Remarkable People podcast, as you said. You're executive fellow at Haas School of Business at UC Berkeley and an adjunct professor at University of South Wales. That's an interesting one. He's also the chief evangelist for Apple and a trustee of the Wikimedia Foundation. And he's written so many books. Go out and check them out. There's 11 of them. And he has his BA from Stanford and MBA from UCLA and honorary doctorate from Babson College. Well, with that being said, you know, you did something really quite interesting, and that you tell the Ionic Think Different story, because, look, you've been a great marketer, a great marketing guy, as they say, and this advertising campaign that ran, you even show Einstein, the picture, but you open the book with the Ionic story of Think Different advertising campaign that you ran in 97. Could you tell the story, and I think more importantly, speak with our listeners about the three distinct sections of this book, which it's around growth, grit, and grace, and why these elements are really so important for personal transformation. You know, you've been on your own personal journey, and I know grit has been one of the bigger ones that you've had to meet with all the obstacles along the way. And as my personal growth listeners want to know, they want to know, how do I develop that strong grit?
Yes. So to first, you want me to talk about the Think Different campaign, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So Think Different was an ad campaign that happened in 1997. And to go back in history, at that time, many people thought that Apple would die. And so the same thinking, if you will, was that Apple would die, Windows would take over the world. And so Apple came up with this campaign called Think Different, where it showed like Einstein, Picasso, Amelia Earhart, Richard Branson, people that the message was, if you think different, if you are an innovator, if you're a visionary, if you are a pioneer, then you have to think different. And the logic was, well, if you want to use a Macintosh, you need to think different, just like these leaders. And the ad campaign was unveiled to the marketing department of Apple. I was in that meeting. At the time, I was an Apple fellow and chief evangelist. And Steve Jobs was also in the meeting. So at the end of the presentation of this ad campaign, Lee Clow from the ad agency says to Steve, I have two copies of these videos. I'm going to give one to you and one to Guy. And Steve, as only Steve would say, he says, no, just give me both copies. Don't give one to Guy. And so at that moment, I spoke up and I said, what's the matter, Steve? Don't you trust me? And then he said, no, Guy, I do not trust you. And, you know, as I look back, this is one of those man or mouse moments where, you know, for the rest of your life, you're going to say, why did I not speak up? Why did I not stand up for myself? So I said, screw it. Let's do it. So when he said that, I said, that's okay, Steve, because I don't trust you either. And that probably cost me a few tens of millions of dollars in stock options, but I'm telling you, it was worth it. So that's the Think Different campaign. And, you know, why did I tell that story at the beginning of the book? It's because, well, A, I wanted to hook you and make you read the book. But B, my logic is that, you know, back then thinking different was okay. But now it seems like, you know, the world is in a worse place in many ways. So now you have to go beyond thinking different into thinking remarkable. So the next question, of course, is what's remarkable? And for me, remarkable is not that you're rich or famous, but that you have made the world a better place, that you have made a difference. And so this book is geared towards how to make a difference, because my logic is if you make a difference, then people will have no choice but to consider you remarkable. So this is not a chicken or egg thing. You know, it's not about repositioning or rebranding yourself. This is about step one is you make a difference. Step two is people consider you remarkable. And that's what I'm all about. As you say, the book is divided into three pieces. Growth, Grit, and Grace. And this is because over the course of 5 years and interviewing all these people and my own career, it's just been so obvious to me that if you want to make a difference and you want to be remarkable, then you need to grow through three phases. And growth is where you learn to learn, that you learn that you can do more things, you can take risks, you can, you know, embrace vulnerability. And even if you have a growth mindset, it's still not going to come easy. So you need to have grit. And this is the work of Angela Duckworth. And right. Finally, with growth and grit, you probably achieve success, but in the last third of your career, I think that remarkable people, they turn from, you know, trying to achieve success to trying to pay back. And so I call this success oblige, which means oblige. Success oblige in my mind is that when you are successful, it's not just because you have growth and grit, but because some teacher, some coach, some mentors, you know, somebody gave you some breaks. And so because they gave you breaks that enabled you to succeed, you owe the universe a payback. And the payback is you help other people succeed too.
You know, it's interesting you said that story about Steve Jobs and you standing up. And I think one of those things you learn along the way is strong purpose and personal values. I had two authors on here around values. And one of your values is your own integrity, right? And when you carry these kind of things and you're vulnerable and you have high integrity and you determined what your values are, you can stand there in that position. And regardless of it costing you tens of millions of dollars, you kind of stood up for yourself, you know? Yeah. And I recently listened to the podcast you did with Angela Duckworth with quite fervor. It was called The Gritty Road to Growth. And in the podcast, I happened to be driving in the car at the time. And Angela speaks about her mother and her father and how she looked at her mother as a champion, because really her father was the kingpin, she thought, right? But when she reevaluated things after her father died, she really figured it out. Would you mind telling the story and what you learned about grit from Angela during that podcast? Because that particular podcast to me was really fascinating because of the epiphany that Angela had between her mother and her father.
Listen, when I did that interview, I had no idea that was coming. Okay. I mean, it was not a scripted moment at all. I don't think even Angela intended to talk about that. Well, somehow she got to telling the story of how her father was setting these high, high standards for her. And, you know, he wanted her to be a doctor or, you know, something like that. And she wanted to be an educator. So one great story before the great story is she tells her father she wants to be an educator. And the father like ruminates about this overnight. And the next day he comes to her and he says, okay, you can be an educator, but I want you to be Secretary of Education of the United States, which, you know, I mean, I don't want to perpetuate any Asian stereotypes, but yeah, I mean, that's a tiger dad. So she tells the story of how her tiger dad, you know, set these high standards for her, which for most of her life, she thought this is the kind of the determining factor that drove her to succeed. But then she figured out, her mother's about 90 now, she figured out that, you know, her mother was remarkable too. She left either China or Taiwan and came to America by herself to seek a better life. She's not speaking English. She made all these sacrifices. She wanted to be an artist, but she sacrificed for her two kids. And you know, with hindsight, Angela realized that she made a lot of sacrifices too. It wasn't just her father who was the primary determinant of her success. So she tells a story that her father passed away, and now her mother has this kind of freedom. And she now at 90 wants to realize her dream of being an artist.
Right.
So she's in a assisted living house, and she went to the director of the house and said, you know, I want another room. And he said, well, what's the matter with the room you have? Don't you like it? She goes, no, I love it. I want another room, and I'm going to make that my studio. And I thought that was, you know, 90 years old, assisted living, you're asking for another room to make an artist studio. I mean, how cool is that? You really can't get much cooler than that.
I want to just tell all my listeners, go to Guy's podcast. We'll put a link. And especially that one, because it was so moving for me to understand the realization of really the contribution and the sacrifices her mother had made.
Yeah.
Because her father was so strong. She always thought her father was the strongest one. She really found out her mother was the strongest one. Wow. And I think in many of these families, you will find that out. We don't give enough credit from that side. You basically, with these 200 people, Jane Goodall, Stacey Abrams, but this Olivia Giuliani was an interesting one. And the interview was with all these remarkable people, but her story, which is so compelling and a great example of someone who was trying to make a difference in abortion rights. Can you just paraphrase that story for our listeners? Yeah. Because I don't think many people know who Olivia is, but the reality, the difference she made was, you're talking about wanting to make a difference, huge difference.
Yeah. So Olivia Giuliani is about a 20-year-old political activist from Houston, Texas. And this is a great story. It's sad that a story like this even exists in America. So this congressman from Florida named Matt Gaetz, he made a speech at a conservative gathering. And he said in the speech something to the effect of, you know, why is it that the short, fat, ugly women who look like thumbs are the ones always trying to get abortion rights when they're the least likely to have sex and get pregnant? I mean, your head explodes to think that a congressman would lower himself that low. I mean, you can't get much lower than that.
Yeah, I agree.
So when he said that, Olivia tweeted, "I'm 5'11" without shoes. I'm 6'3" with shoes, and I like to stand tall so that men like you know you where you stand." Okay, and so then Matt Gaetz responded with something like "dander raised." In other words, "Oh, I got under your skin, Olivia." And Olivia turned that interaction around into a fundraising effort for abortion rights. And she raised $2.5 million off that exchange. And I just think that that is one of the greatest stories I've ever heard. Jesus, I mean, you know, have we gone so low that a congressman has to pick on a 18 or 19-year-old kid from Houston, Texas? I mean, one of the things I learned in my book is that people who are remarkable, they do not punch down.
Right.
When you see people punch down, that person is not remarkable. Just cross that person off your list.
Right. I was going to show the listeners on here, but go just get the book, because in here he has some great pictures of all of these remarkable people, really. And they are remarkable. And like I said, 200 people he interviewed for this, and he put as many as he could in the book. And, you know, there's one thing that you said during that interview with Angela that kind of stuck in my mind. You said, you know, you have a chapter on adopting this growth mindset, and you mentioned that you're not a remarkable hockey player or surfer. And you mentioned that you took up sports at the ages of 44 and 60, respectively, meaning surfing at 60. What do you want our listeners to know about starting something? Because this goes back to Angela's mother. She held off doing a lot. She's 90 years old now, right? And you put the two and two together, and she says, "I'm going to have my own art studio," right? So knowing that it's never too late to begin and adopting this growth mindset, what would you want to let the listeners walk away with? Because I think a lot of people, Guy, allow things to, they're fearful.
Yeah.
If there's any one thing, the biggest thing is fear that gets in the way of them accomplishing something they'd like to do, right? Whether it's doing a bungee jump or it's skiing down a double black diamond or it's any of those kind of things that you want to do. Tell us a little bit more about your own fears of surfing.
But by the way, I would not do either of those two things, but that's a side discussion. So yeah, I took up the ice hockey at the age of 44. I'm from Hawaii, so I had literally never skated before. And, you know, in Hawaii, we don't exactly have a lot of pond hockey. And we have shave ice, but we don't have, you know, pond ice. And then I took up surfing at 60 because my daughter took up surfing. And I think that that is, you know, true testament to a growth mindset, because most people don't take up hockey at 44, much less surfing at 60. And I really learned these lessons from Carol Dweck. Carol Dweck is the mother of the growth mindset. And she's a professor at Stanford. And this book, Mindset, that she wrote is huge influence upon me, you know, not just in terms of sports, but, you know, when you... I'll tell you something. When an author tells you to read somebody else's book, there is no more sincere form of flattery. So I'm going to tell you two books to read. One is Mindset by Carol Dweck, D-W-E-C-K. The other book is called If You Want to Write by Brenda Yuland, U-E-L-A-N-D. And Brenda Yuland's book basically says, if you want to write, write. Now, many of you may not be writers, but just substitute whatever you're interested in there, programming, movie making, you know, painting, whatever you want. And so I think part of the growth mindset is you got to get past the naysayers and these so-called experts. All right. I like to combine a term and two terms, schmuck and experts, makes schmexperts.
Schmexperts.
And so these schmexperts tell you, you know, you can't write. You don't have a PhD in English. You've never taken a course in creative writing. You're not a writer. Well, that's a schmexpert for you, because that person should not be what's in your head limiting what you can do. You never let somebody else limit what you can do. And so I think that's a very important lesson about, you know, embracing vulnerability and taking that risk, whether it's surfing or writing or ice hockey. Very, very important lessons.
Well, those are two great books. And like you said, it's a great honor for you to mention those two. But the Carolyn Dweck or the Carol Dweck book, I'm sure many of my listeners know, but if you haven't read it, go back and reread it, because the value that's in that book is truly all the studies she did as a psychologist. Yeah. It's amazing. It really is. And it's something that you'll walk away with a new mindset, the growth mindset.
Let me make it even better for you all.
Okay.
So Carol Dweck had a protege named Mary Murphy, and I interviewed Mary Murphy after the book was done. Mary Murphy is also a professor of psychology, and she came up with this brilliant insight.
Right.
And the brilliant insight is that, you know, Carol Dweck talks about the mindset, which is really in your head, right? You're not a writer, or you are a writer, and there's these schmexperts, which are external, but they affect your brain. And obviously, or not obviously, but one of the big factors in overcoming a fixed mindset is overcoming your own self-imposed negativity.
Right.
So anyway, so the growth mindset is about what's in your head. But Mary Murphy has pointed out that you also need to compensate for the environment that you're in. So if you have a growth mindset, but you're in an organization with a fixed mindset, you're going to have a lot of problems, because the fixed mindset organization doesn't give you the ability to progress and to learn. They think that whatever you are is what you're going to remain. So a very important aspect of the growth mindset is to also read a book by Mary Murphy that talks about the implications of the environment that you're in. Because it takes both to truly succeed.
Well, you now have given three great recommendations, and I'm going to give you one. You might even know this gentleman. And it is, I just did an interview with him, and his name's Dr. James Doty, D-O-T-Y, at Stanford. He's the head of compassion and altruism. But he is a neuroscientist who just wrote a book called Mind Magic. And I think he'd be somebody that you should certainly
I'm writing that down.
And I will, after we get off here, I'll do it. For all my listeners, we'll be posting that podcast on or about May 5th with Dr. Dottie. Hey, you know, everybody knows Brené Brown. I mean, you've been on the stage with her, I'm sure. And you speak about vulnerability. And everybody talks about vulnerability. But sometimes I will say males have a challenge being as vulnerable as we should. and we all face failures and setbacks along the way, whether we want to admit it or not. What have been some of the setbacks and failures, and what have you learned from your own? And what advice would you provide our listeners so that they can be resilient despite setbacks? And then if you would, give us some examples from the books, individuals, which I picked out, Andrea Peet and Christy Yamaguchi. Now, most people think Christy Yamaguchi, well, she just ended up with an Olympic gold medal. They don't look at what she had to put into it and the setbacks she had in the process. And this other one, Andrea Peet, is really phenomenal considering she had ALS. My goodness gracious, you know.
So these are two remarkable women. So Christy Yamaguchi, who we all know is this world champion figure skater, Olympic gold. So this is a great story she told me, which is in her first competition as a little kid, she finished 12th. And she went to her mom and said, well, how come those other girls got ribbons and I didn't? And her mom said, it's because you finished 12th, Christy. And, you know, I don't know if that was the single moment, but she figured out you got to pay the price. You know, you got to show grit. And so Christy started just practicing hours every day. And, you know, 10 or 15 years later, she's world champion. And I think that is a great story of what you have to do. I mean, if being remarkable and making a difference were as easy as reading my book or Brenda Yulin's book or Carol Dweck's book, there would be a lot more remarkable people in the world. I'm telling you. So that's the story. Now, we need to. I think one of the ways that you overcome vulnerability and you embrace yourself is you listen to stories like that and you think, you know, wow, Christy Yamaguchi finished 12th in her first contest. I finished 12th in my first contest. Maybe I can be like that, right? And then Andrea Lytle-Peet, about 9 years ago, she was diagnosed with ALS. And ALS, for those of you who are not familiar, usually kills the person in 2 to 3 years. So she's lived, you know, 7, 8 beyond the usual expectancy. Now, when most people get ALS, or I think when most people would get a diagnosis like that, I don't know about you, but I would go into a deep funk. And I don't know if I'd ever come out of that funk. But Andrea decided that now that she's had this ALS diagnosis, she's going to complete a marathon in all 50 states. I mean, is that not a remarkable reaction? And she has actually pulled this off. And I'll tell you a great story about Andrea Lytle-Peet that shows you the spirit and the strength of this woman's character. So, you know, what better marathon to make your 50th marathon than the Boston Marathon, right? I mean, that's
I'm going to hold this up so people can. They can actually see her. If you're watching on video, I'm showing the page that she's on, which is 29. So,
So she decides, you know, well, the best place to finish this challenge is the Boston Marathon. But she, at this point, she rides a three-wheeled bike.
Paddling,
right? And the Boston Marathon has many categories, but not for three-wheeled bikes. And so she applies to the Boston Marathon, and the Boston Marathon turns her down because they don't have a category for the type of vehicle that she pedals. Which, you know, I just like, if you think about that for just 30 seconds, they have other categories for people with disabilities, but not that particular one. So you know, it's not like, I don't think anybody was going to say, oh my God, that, you know, that's an illegal vehicle, throw her out of the race. Why didn't they just let her race? Like, right, isn't that the point? But anyway, so she gets rejected from the Boston Marathon. And so what she did instead is she went with her little team and ran or biked the course the day before the official Boston Marathon, so she could say she did that marathon. And I gotta tell you, I just love that spirit. I mean, you know, you're not letting me compete. I'll just do it on my own on the course before the official race. I mean, how great is that?
I remember a story, and you probably remember this. I'm not certain because you've been on hundreds and hundreds of stages, maybe thousands, speaking to audiences. And when I was at a meeting for the $1 million round table, a young man with no legs came out on stage who was a weightlifter. And he was competing in competitions just like her. And they said, we don't have a category for somebody without legs. Yet he lifted more weight than anybody. Do you know who I'm talking about? I don't remember the guy's name.
No, I don't know this story. Yeah.
But this was like blew me away because he doesn't walk across the stage. He uses his hands to move across the stage, obviously, right? And he's saying, you can't believe they couldn't find a spot for me. Ultimately, he petitioned, he got in, and he won the competition, right? So it just shows you that's remarkable. That is truly remarkable to go to that degree. Now, one of the things that you speak about in Making a Difference, and as I was going through the book, I loved this story. You tell a story about the eucalyptus trees in your backyard and your removal of these trees to plant oaks. And yeah. I just had Jim Cathcart on here this morning, and he said to say hi, by the way. And, you know, his is about the oaks, and he speaks a lot about, he uses that analogy of the acorn. And so why is the story or this metaphor of planting acorns perfect for making a difference and being remarkable? Because what you also said is you probably won't be here to see those oak trees, which yes. I would probably say you're right, actually make it to their maturity.
Well,
but the eucalyptus trees, they grow like weeds.
Oh, okay. This is a great story. So I live in Watsonville, California. And listen, I love a lot of things from Australia. Believe it or not, I'm deaf and my cochlear implant is from Australia. I'm chief evangelist of a company from Australia. I have an external display for my laptop from Australia. A lot of good things come from Australia, but eucalyptus is not one of them. So eucalyptus is an invasive species. It takes a lot of water. They have weak root structures, so they fall over all the time. And more than anything else, they burn. They have these oils in them, so they burn very well. And so when your house is surrounded by eucalyptus trees, it's kind of like you're surrounded by dynamite. It could go off at any moment. So I cut down a lot of eucalyptus trees, and now I'm left with this kind of bare hill. And I don't want to look over this bare hill like, you know, some apocalyptic thing just happened. So let's return this hill to its natural state. And the natural native species there or here is oak. So then I have to do all this research, like, how do you plant oaks? And I learned that, yes, you can put in a sapling or a seedling, but it's better to start from an acorn, because when you put an acorn in the ground, I guess the taproot is better or something. But anyway, an acorn will catch up to a sapling and a seedling. So, you know, go get acorns. So now I'm on this quest to go get acorns. And believe it or not, not every oak tree drops acorns. So I got to drive all over looking for acorns. I finally found, I'll give you an inside tip. If you want to emulate what I did and plant acorns, on University Avenue in Los Gatos, California, there's a lot of oak trees that drop a lot of acorns. I just, if you saw a Japanese guy collecting acorns there, that was me. Okay. So Now you get your acorns and you bring them and you put them in water, because the ones that are dead float. So you throw out all the dead floaters and you keep the ones that sink. And then you put them in your refrigerator for a few months to simulate winter, because, I don't know, somehow that triggers their growth. And then after that, you plant them and you hope that they take root. But I'll tell you, I've planted hundreds of acorns and I got about 10 seedlings out of it. And then you got to worry about deer and you got to worry about, you know, everything else. And after all that, in 20 years, there'll be oaks that provide shade. And as you pointed out, I'm 69. So best case, 89, I might be able to sit under the oaks that made that shade. But, you know, odds are I'll be gone. So that is also like a big moment in one's life when you realize you're doing something that's not for you. This is no way it's going to be for me. This is for my kids and grandkids. But anyway, okay, so now you know more about oaks and acorns than you probably ever wanted. But the point here is that if you want to make a difference, it's very difficult to specify, you know, this is exactly my path. This is exactly what I should do. This is exactly the piece of software I should write. This is exactly the book I should write. My experience is that you have to plant a lot of oaks to get a few oak trees. It's a law of big numbers. And so the message there is, if you want to make a difference, you got to plant a lot of seeds.
And what comes from that for me is you can't be afraid to fail. You've just got to go do. You know, I was speaking with Jim Cathcart. I said, Jim, you're the guy, he's 78 now or something. And I said, you just keep showing up. I keep seeing you all over because you just show up. And I think that is part of it when you show up. And I want to talk about speaking with the listeners. You have a chapter in the book about doing good shit and how doing the right thing is neither the simplest nor the most practical option. And maybe that was when you started the beginning of the book telling Steve Jobs that you didn't trust him either. But that was maybe not the most practical, but you did. But that making a difference meant there is a light at the end of the tunnel. How, though, did you discern and follow your inner compass? Because that's really true. When you get an idea or a thought, you're like the idea guy. You've had tons of ideas. They haven't all worked out, but I saw the list on your website of all the companies you've been involved in. But there's probably a list three times as long that's accompanying that isn't there, that you tried something and it didn't work and you failed, right?
Well, you know, listen, I started my career in the jewelry manufacturing business. I'm ending my career as chief evangelist of Canva. Now, right after the jewelry business, I went to Apple. And so, you know, when I tell people, you know, what's your background? I say, oh, I'm chief evangelist of Apple, chief evangelist of Canva, board of
Mercedes-Benz,
Wikipedia. You know, I only talk about the successes. I'm not stupid, right? I mean, right. I'll tell you something. In Silicon Valley, we throw a lot of shit up against the wall. A very small part of it sticks. And then we go up to what's stuck and we paint the bullseye around it and we declare victory. We say, I hit the bullseye. Well, let me tell you something. I'll give you some advice. You can always hit the bullseye if you paint the bullseye after you shoot the arrow. And I think that's a very important concept. And Steve Jobs addressed this in his commencement speech at Stanford. And he said, listen, you can only connect the dots looking backwards. It's impossible to connect them looking forward. And, you know, like, I quit law school. I quit law school after 2 weeks. It's not like I had a plan, right? I mean, I didn't say, oh, guy, you know, the strategic move right now is to quit law school. That's going to pay in the long run. I quit law school because I was miserable. And yet I can look back and say, wow, that was a really good thing I did that. And maybe it's rationalization, but I think that, you know, people should give themselves a break. And especially people who are Gen Z listening to this, you're going to be alive till you're 90 or 95. You've got a lot of time and don't be afraid of taking a lot of samples and making a lot of mistakes. And I mean, you could make the argument that the opposite of success is not failure. The opposite of success is learning. And as long as you're learning, and you don't make the same failure twice, you're on a path. You're on a path to make a difference.
Well, look, you obviously could speak with us all day long about writing our goals, but you learned the most from this by Garrett McNamara, the guy you used to surf with.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And he says most people do it wrong. And I took this from the book, but could you tell the listeners about a plan, the roadmap, and the suggested way that McNamara tells you to go to Eureka is what this chapter is. Get beyond Eureka, for my listeners.
Well, it's interesting that here's a great juxtaposition that I bet no one in the history of mankind has made yet. So on the one hand, we have Garrett McNamara. He is the star of the HBO series 100 Foot Waves. So his idea of a fun time is going out and surfing 100 Foot Waves in Nazaré, Portugal. Okay. Now, at the other end of the spectrum, we have Julia Cameron. And Julia Cameron wakes up every day and she writes this journal entry longhand. And I'm telling you that multiple times people talk about, you know, yes, you need to have goals, but you need to write them down. There's something about writing things down that makes you more careful, more knowledgeable, more cogent, more dedicated. Writing your goals down is a very important thing. And I'll tell you one more lesson from Garrett McNamara, which is that, you know how people talk about faking it until you make it and, you know, trying to put on this tough face and all that. He didn't say that at all. What he said you need to do is not fake it till you make it. You need to face your fears. Mm-hmm. So Garrett McNamara, 100-foot wave surfer, he said for a long time he would not go out in anything that's 10 or 12 feet. He was afraid to do that until his friends forced him to do it, to face his fears. So he faced his fears, got past the 10 to 12 mark, and then kept going. And now he's at, you know, the biggest waves in the world.
Right.
So, like, now I'm not advocating that all of you become big wave surfers, but let's take something that many of us share, which is the fear of public speaking. So the way to get past the fear of public speaking, guess what, is to face your fears. So you just need to get out there and speak dozens and dozens of times. And I have spoken hundreds of times, and I'm telling you right now that I'm the Garrett McNamara of public speaking. I mean, I don't fear anything about public speaking anymore. Mm-hmm. And that just comes with repetition. So if you want to make a difference and be remarkable, you need to face your fears.
Well, one of those things for Garrett and for you, and every time you keep facing that fear, it's almost like sitting down at a piano. Once you conquer that piano, you know, it's like, hey, I've practiced this enough. Yeah. I have practiced speaking so that you feel comfortable. A lot of people will say, well, even after 100 times of being on the stage, I still get stage fright. And you're like saying, well, no, I don't really see why you do that. You don't have to have stage fright because there's really nothing to be afraid of. I always say, if you speak to an audience like they're your best friend in the movie theater when you're whispering to them about the movie, that's really what you want to do.
I think the key to public speaking is telling stories, right?
Yes.
Stories are the key to good public speakers. Now, if you think about it, just think about it. You're afraid of public speaking, but if you are sitting at a bar and having beers, or you're sitting at a dinner table with your friends, and you tell the story about how, you know, you did this or you did that, or you saw somebody do this, or, you know, you read Carol Dweck's book or something. If you're just talking to your friends, telling them a story, are you nervous? Are you scared that they might not applaud? Are you scared of, you know, making a miscommunication or a misstep? Not at all. You're crying out loud. You're telling stories to your friends. And that should be your mindset when you make a speech. You're telling stories to your friends. And I think that, you know, people need to get through their head this, the most important fact, which is the audience wants you to succeed. They don't want you to fail. Because if you think about it, if someone in the audience wants you to fail, it means that they're saying, I want to waste my time, right? I want to waste my time. I want to see that guy fail, which is ridiculous. Everybody considers their time important. So they want you to succeed because a good speech means that they learn something. They don't want you to fail.
No, that's true. Whether it's a TEDx talk or it's speaking at the local high school to somebody, they're all the same. And I think the important thing is, you mentioned it, tell a good story. You know, they always say, tell them what you're going to tell them, and then retell them again, right? Or whatever that is. And then in your case, we want to insert great stories. And when you start with stories, it's relatable to people. And I think the key is stories are relatable. And I want you, talking about telling stories, I have two questions still left in our podcast. And one of them is, there hasn't been anybody probably that's been put up on your chapter, Sell Your Dreams, to speak to, who calls VC, whoever it is, to try and raise money and pitch. And you said, for our listeners who maybe are out there saying, hey, I need to get money for my idea, you're the guy, let me tell you, who's the guy is the guy. How is it that most people get the whole pitch process wrong? You actually specifically mentioned the reason why. And I want you to tell this, because I'm about ready to tell it, okay, but I want you to tell it.
I'm sitting here with my fingers crossed saying, God, what did I say about that?
So what you said was,
No, don't tell me.
Oh, you know. Okay.
I'm a high risk kind of guy. So
you're gonna take a risk.
I hope I said that what many people get wrong about a pitch from the get-go, which ruins the whole pitch. If you get this part wrong, you're digging yourself out of a hole, which is that the purpose of a pitch is not to get a signature on the bottom line. It's not that they ask you for wiring instructions. It's not that you use shock and awe and overwhelm them in 1 hour, so they're just turned to jelly and they just, all they want to do is give you money. Okay. That's not the purpose of a pitch. The purpose of a pitch is to not get eliminated and get to the next step, which is more discussion and due diligence. Now, if you get this wrong and you think the purpose of a pitch is to use shock and awe and get them into a money investing check writing stage, then what happens with your brain is, now you think, okay, I got to get them into shock and awe. So more is better. So instead of 10 slides, I'm going to use 60, and I'm going to have 5 people from my team there so they can see that I have a team, and all these 5 people are going to have a speaking role. And, you know, it just compounds the crap upon the crap. You just remember, you just don't want to be eliminated. And that, you declare victory if you're not eliminated. That's the key. I hope I said that.
You know what? You got exactly right. You passed the test. You passed the test. Okay, one last question, and I'm going to hold the book up again for my audience. Think Remarkable with Guy Kawasaki, the 9 paths to transform your life and make a difference. Truly, this is a fantastic book. I want all my listeners to go get this. And I want to ask you this one last question. You know, after people turn the last page of this book, you know, what is the one action or thought you hope sticks with them as they kind of move forward in their lives? We've talked about a lot today, from Angela Duckworth to Carol Dweck to you name it. And you gave 3 great books that my listeners can read on top of your book. But what is it that you really simply want people to walk away from here?
Well, I want people to walk away simply knowing that anybody, and I do mean literally anybody, can make a difference and can make the world a better place. I don't want people to walk away thinking that, oh my God, I have to be Jane Goodall or Steve Jobs to be remarkable and make a difference. Anybody can make a difference. And if you make a difference, you will be considered remarkable. And so this book, My podcast is not called Rich People or Famous People. It's called Remarkable People. And I want people to make a difference. And, you know, that's the fundamental message I want to leave. That, listen, when I die, I want people to say that I helped them make a difference. And that's the most important thing I could say right now.
In the world we live in today, we need more people to make a difference. When they need to be remarkable, because they need to do some of the things that you've done, which is stand up to others. We live in such a time right now, you and I could talk forever about the divisiveness and, you know, what social media has done and all the other things we could talk about. But more importantly is, I'd say, take an action. You know, people ask me, you know, Greg, why do you do this podcast? You've been doing this podcast for 18 years. I say, number one, because it helps people to gain clarity about what it is that they'd like from people like you. Number two, my whole show, I basically, the donations that I receive in go to Compassionate Communications Foundation, and I'm going to put a plug in right now, because they come from authors, and they basically are saying, hey, help the homeless and the Ukrainian refugees. I buy bicycles for the kids that are coming out of Ukraine, going to Poland through a source that I have. Wow. And the second thing I do is I go on the street with $100 gift cards and I give them away to people who are in need. And so the point of it is, Compassionate Communications Foundation is the sole reason I do this podcast, is so that I can let people get clear about what their purpose is and their dream in life. And then they can go do some of the things. And if somebody like me, you know, I say small little me, can make my own little difference every year, year in and year out. Yep. Anybody out there can do that, right? Yep. Anybody. So,
and you know what? It takes all of us doing little things. We cannot wait for this, you know, magic savior to do this. It's right. Up to us.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, I want to give you kudos for the book. I also shout out to Madison as well. Great book, you guys. Great compilation of putting things together. You guys gave me 95 questions to ask. There was no way I was going to be able to get all 95. And actually, if you noticed, I only used one of your questions and all the others were ones that I came up with. But that's what makes for a good interview.
Oh, listen, in the chat, I just put you a link for you. So there are some people who, you know, they're not readers. So working with Canva, we've created a free lesson, online lesson. People can go through this lesson to learn how to be remarkable. So you don't, I'm shooting myself in the foot. You don't need to buy the book. You can also take this course. But if you take the course, I would bet that you're going to be even more convinced to buy the book.
Namaste to you, man. Appreciate having you on the show. Okay. Thank you for listening to this podcast on Inside Personal Growth. We appreciate your support. And for more information about new podcasts, please go to insidepersonalgrowth.com or any of your favorite channels to listen to our podcast. Thanks again and have a wonderful day.